I'm gonna record now.
When we can't speak openly, we can't think clearly.
That's why we started something new.
A safe space to actually talk about the tough topics.
Four intelligent minds.
Four different perspectives.
In the cul-de-sac, your opinion is just as important as mine.
What do you want to talk about?
I like that ending. That was a good ending.
You like that? Yeah. Yeah. It was sincere. It was from the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right, guys. Welcome to another episode of The Cul-de-Sac. We do not have Gray with us this week, but he will be back next week. We're all kind of chugging along, doing that natural entrepreneur stuff, and sometimes things get a little bit hectic. But we're going to get into a few different topics about the weather and about how kind of crazy the weather has been recently and how that might affect mood, how that might affect you, how it's affecting us currently, especially me personally. But let's talk about the power outages. What are you thinking about the weather in Texas right now? What the hell is going on?
What is going on?
The weather in a lot of places is just a little bit off, right? I think it goes with the trend of 2020, 2021 though. You know, I'm not super shocked.
Yeah, I can agree with that, honestly. What were you gonna say, Tessa?
I was just looking, I wanted to see across the country, like what it looks like. Cause I look at the weather here and then I hear news clips and stuff. So it's like, it's cold everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Even down in like Florida and like the warmer areas, even those places are pretty chill right now.
Yeah, California is a little cooler than normal too. So, yeah.
Which is, what is that? What is cooler than normal?
Oh, are we going to jump into that? You know, because what's cold in California? I think that was something we discussed in our text messages. Is that did you want to attack the guy that was from California? Is that what this is all about?
Or just
really? Tessa, you having a really bad week and you need to take it out on somebody?
Cold is relative.
That's me, Rob.
Relative.
Can I be your whooping boy?
We have some friends in Florida, and when my daughter went to visit a couple years ago, they were like, it's freezing down here, so she needs to go ahead and bring some warm clothes. And it was like 65.
Everybody was running around in t-shirts. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tank top and shorts, the weather in Colorado. Yeah. But what do you think that's a testament to currently? I mean, Texas is crazy right now. They don't have the infrastructure in the first place to be built out for cold weather. I mean, I don't think they ever expected to be frozen in Austin, Texas, basically.
Yeah, right. I think that's part of the issue there is they're just not used to handling it. So they don't have the infrastructure to do it. And I know a lot of our companies that we work with are based out of Texas. Yeah. So we're even having a hard time getting the services taken care of because people are working from home too. And if power lines are down, they can't work, they can't process what they normally process. The post offices aren't able to deliver. So it's like a lot of business comes out of Texas.
Oh yeah.
A lot of business comes out of, there's a lot of corporate headquarters down there. So it's like, oh, I kind of wonder what this is doing to businesses that are across the country that are serviced out of Texas.
And a lot more moving there too. So I'm kind of interested to see how things shift it has to be a testament of global warming, right? Like it has to be something associated with that. It makes no sense to me how when I was a kid, I never even heard of a lick of snow. I'm pretty sure up until the point that I was born, nobody saw snow in Texas. That might be a little bit of an over-exaggeration, but at the same point in time, I really wonder what's going to happen and how they have to shift to something like that, how the South is going to have to shift to, you know, those crazy weather spikes that we've been getting recently.
Yeah. Well, and even the cost, the budgeting that the cities and communities have to do associated with preparing for stuff like that. That's something that across the country we probably need to, because weather patterns are changing. So across the country we probably need to start bracing.
Yeah.
Bracing for some of the economic impact of beyond COVID.
Yeah.
There's other stuff going on.
Well, I kind of feel like, you know, ever since early 2020, I think that we all need to be a little bit more prepared for the unknown. you know, and for us, we've, you know, we're storing more water, we're storing more food, because I don't know, economically, politically, you know, when it comes to climate, whatever it may be, you have to be prepared for like at least a week of just things shutting down, you know? And so I just hope that people use this time as an opportunity to prepare a little bit better, you know?
Yeah, well, that's something with some of the people that I'm working with that we've been talking about, because a lot of people came into 2021 saying like, it's gonna be a better year and so many things are gonna be so much better and blah, blah, blah. And I really worked more in the direction of, if they're not, now we're prepared though. We need to have the mindset right. that of resilience that, you know what, there's probably gonna be some more shit that happens this year.
Yeah, well, you know what, look at me is, what I don't understand is like, just because a year changes on a calendar date, like what really changes? I mean, how about all of us when, oh bro, you just turned a new age. Like, you know, what does 40 feel like? You know, like the same as it did at 39, bro. And I'm doing the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the same with the calendar year, with a lot of the stuff that we're doing, not much changes for people. So like, I think that people may have been, some of them may have been hopeful, some may have been naive, but just because, you know, the clock hits 12, what really changed, yeah. right?
I think it's just the
there's comfortability in that too. Exactly, there's comfortability in cycles. And that's what we all get stuck in, especially in a country like we are, you know, where we're so well taken care of. We have poverty in our country, but it's nothing like poverty in a different country, yeah. in Mexico, in Africa, anything like that, where people are resilient, where they don't work off of that cycle type pattern. They're like, we have to be, you know, vigilant of what's going on at all points in time. And we have to make sure that we coordinate and attack whatever's happening. That's not what we do in America. In America, we're very laid back about everything. Oh,
we have everything in abundance
next year. Huh?
We have everything in abundance.
Exactly.
We have access to almost anything. Right. We're really spoiled. We're truly spoiled. I mean,
we're the spoiled stepchild of the world, basically.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
That's true in a lot of ways as well. It's like we have an expectation of our government or our community to take care of us. And there is for sure some responsibility there. But at the same time, when that doesn't happen, or the follow through isn't there, or it doesn't line up with what you are expecting, there still has to be some personal responsibility with like, okay.
I agree. And I think a lot of times personal responsibility is lacking a lot, because people do have the expectation of being taken care of, but it's because we've all been taken care of.
Yeah. Right? What do you think the next thing is? Because all the doomsday preppers right now are like flipping the bird to everybody, just super excited. Some of them are probably in their bunkers already. 2021 is not turning out to be exactly what everybody thought. Like, we went from a pandemic into one of the cold, I mean, personally in Colorado, there's one season that it got down to like negative 20, negative 30. And that happened, you know, this past weekend or what, I can't remember what day it was specifically, but I mean,
it was cold. That day was very cold.
It was death. It felt like death.
Yeah. It felt like death.
Yeah. That's what I imagine death. if death was like, it would be last Saturday or whatever the hell it was.
Well, and there's true, like my car stopped working because it got so cold. I know it has something to do with the cold, because that's when it's been affected.
Yeah.
So like it is, there's stuff you got to work around when it gets this cold. And that's what I was chatting when we were kind of talking about topics. I remember, and that's why I wanted to just see what your guys is, because Miles, you grew up in Texas?
No, I grew up in North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina. Yeah. And you're California.
Petey Pablo. He grew up with Petey Pablo. I don't even know Tessa. Do you know Petey Pablo, Tessa?
I don't know who Petey Pablo is.
North Carolina, raise up. No? Okay. Just Google the song. Google the song. Go ahead.
You have to tell me how to spell that to Google it.
Petey Pablo. I grew up in California.
So there probably is some regional differences there. Because I know when I was young, and my cousins and my siblings, like if we would go, like during the summer, we used to go to the creeks or the rivers or whatever. And in Northern Idaho, like that's the runoff in the spring. It's like the snowmelt runoff. That water is freezing cold. Yeah. And we were all about it. We're like, let's go swimming. And you'd come out like numb. and shivering and stuff, but it's like it didn't ever stop us. And same with like
going into shock.
Yeah.
But I think too, like as you get older, you just get a little bit more sensitive to the cold, or you just enjoy your comfort so much more. You stop playing like a little kid. I think that a lot of us, if we still had that little kid living inside of us, that cold wouldn't bother us so much. You're like, I'm just going to go have fun, you know?
So Robert's essentially saying, anybody who's listening, if you're about, you know, 50 to 60 years old, it's real cold outside, go outside and play. Preferably like in your skivvies. That's the preferred situation.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Wim Hof. You guys got to check out Wim Hof stuff.
I know Wim Hof.
There's value behind that. Well, and that's one of the things when I was doing some work on inflammation a while back, part of the problem that we have is we don't have those natural hormetic stressors to reduce that. And part of that is our environment. Like we're always either, if it's hot, we're air conditioned. If it's cold, we turn the heat up, but our bodies are always comfortable. So we don't have those normal cycles of something getting worked up and then our body has to work to cool it down, heat it up or whatever. And that's part of what plays into inflammation. So there's health effects. That's another thing I wanted to talk about is the how our bodies are really kind of tied to the environment.
Yeah.
And that's they what I thought.
Any environment, environment. We're not just talking about the climate. We're talking about any type of environment. And the thing is, you know, I know that you guys aren't really on social media anymore, but like, if you watch my workouts, I mean, it's snowing outside, it's cold. My garage is wide open. And I'm training in a t-shirt and shorts, you know, because as much as it sucks, I know that I have to put myself in that environment and reap the benefit of it.
Yeah.
You know, the other day was like, it was 1 degree outside and I went for a 3 mile run. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to suck it up and I'm going to, and to the listeners, if you're 50 or 60, I'm not saying,
yes, he
I'm
is.
Not going to pull a miles. I'm
yes,
not
going to pull a miles. He thinks you sprints up hills
without barefoot, any clothes, actually.
Get the skivvies, just take it all off.
Right.
Sprints up
hills. But I think there's, you know, a form of resilience that you also kind of, you know, put yourself through, you know, some grit. You know, when you can expose yourself to those environments, you know, and just kind of embrace the suck, I guess.
Here's the thing, though. People in, I mean, not just people in America, in, you know, first world countries, they don't see what the benefit of that is. You know what I mean? Like, other than the factor of mental fortitude and, you know, physical fortitude, I'll just say that word again because it's...
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're not seeing, they don't see what the transfer could be. Like, they're going on a daily basis to work at a corporate job where they're going to sit on their ass in the first place and not do anything the entire day other than talk to people, especially now when everything's turned over to a virtual sense where everybody's just talking over Zoom. People don't even have to really leave their house. They can get DoorDash. They can get things delivered to them. So what's the thing that would benefit them? I mean, what would benefit them from that? That's what it is in everybody's head right now. And that's the thing that surprises me. Why they would think on that side of how does this benefit me of putting myself through this? Well, you're not always going to be comfortable. I mean, personally, there's at no point in time, and I've made good money, I've made bad money. There's been no point in time where pushing my body hasn't helped me. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys have the same perspective on that type.
You're talking. Come on, bro.
I was setting you up. I was rolling up totally the carpet for you, like, Rob.
That was like stopped into Malone, like, bro, going for the slam.
Going for the kill.
Right. Well, you know, ultimately, I think a lot of that stuff comes down to resilience, you know. I kind of lost my train of thought on that one. Set me up one more time.
Started at what they don't see the benefit of it based on the factor that they don't do shit in the first place. That's essentially what the conversation is.
Oh, well, okay. So I know I was thinking one thought and then I got carried away with my stupid jokes. So, but you know, I think here, and you're talking about people outside of our country, correct?
No, people in this country, especially in this country. First of all,
I thought you were talking outside of this country.
No.
But then again, all that stuff comes down to priorities and value and your belief system. And you know, I think just like Tessa was talking about, you know, when it's hot outside, people want to be cool. When it's cold, people want to be warm. It's like everyone just wants to be comfortable. And I think that the human, I think as humans, we're actually pretty naturally lazy people. And we are going to take the path of least resistance for the most part. We are going to do what is absolutely easiest for us and the most comfortable for us. And I don't think there's anything to learn when you're inside of your comfort zone. I think that everything that I've ever, in any realm I've ever grown, is because I had to constantly push myself and be uncomfortable. When I want to learn something, I got to be uncomfortable trying to learn something. If I want to be in better shape, I got to be uncomfortable. You know, there's times and seasons for maintenance situations, but you know, you got to be able to push yourself. I get up super early in the morning to go out and work out, and my garage is like an ice box, and I got to go out there into my ice box and go train first thing in the morning. And it's so uncomfortable, but the workout has to get done. I'm not going to regret getting that workout. And I think that just so many people just don't want to be uncomfortable. And again, I think a lot of that just has to do with, you know, we live in a culture where we've been given so much, you know. You know, I have friends, I grew up with some guys that were very poor, and some that came out of a lot of money. And, you know, the moment the guys with a lot of money started to lack, they just didn't even know what to do with themselves, man. Yep. Where the guys that never really had much, and I was one of those guys, we were grittier. We were more creative. It drew a greater bond between a lot of us. But we knew how to go out and hustle and get ours and make things happen, because we had to teach ourselves these valuable tools, right? And it was always being in a state of being uncomfortable, because no one likes being poor. No one likes being broke. I mean, it's uncomfortable, you know? But with my friends that were given a lot more, they didn't know uncomfortable to them was, you know, not being able to spend a certain amount of some money somewhere because their parents wouldn't allow them to.
That only gave me $1,000 for this week. This is bull. God.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right. Well, we're over here like, bro, I'm grinding for that money, that same money. Man.
But like, we also, I just fried bologna on the grill. Like that's my meal for tonight. Just so you know, while you're dealing with $1,000 from your dad. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Right. Bro, how delicious is fried bologna though?
I did it the other day. Like, I still do it. I make good money. I still grill up some bologna or like salami, just throw some cheese on it, grill up, or pop some white bread in the microwave, not in the microwave, in the toaster. Do not take that recipe suggestion. Do not put it in the microwave. I do not know what's going to happen. It might start on fire or explode. I have no idea.
Right.
It's cold out. It's cold outside, so I got to just make fried bologna sandwiches.
But sometimes it's actually really fun kind of reliving some of your childhood stuff, man.
Oh, yeah. You know,
like, how cool is it, like, to take some poor man's ice cream and throw some Captain Crunch on it and call it a day? Or, like, you know, put spaghetti sauce in top ramen and call it spaghetti. Like,
do that,
you know, doing stuff.
Yeah.
We just did some stuff when we were kids.
Yeah. I remember even my ex, when after we broke up, he would have the girls, and there would be weeks where we both were struggling with money.
Yeah.
And he was really good at just like, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
So he would have what he called a sandwich party. And the girls would all pick one ingredient, and they'd have like a sandwich buffet. And it was like this big fun thing to make sandwiches, because you can't really afford meat and vegetables or whatever. But it's like, it's a mindset. It's a mindset.
But it's like, here's the thing. It goes back to that being uncomfortable and having to force creativity. I think that for me, you know, my wife trips out because we can have very little in the house, but I could whip up some stuff, right? That came from being broke.
You know? You have to be super creative.
Those skills very, very came creative, because you're like, man, I got this, this, and this. Like, I got to create something epic because I'm hungry, you know?
Yeah.
You have noodles, and now it's butter, like, and garlic. Okay, it's going to be a great day. It's going to be a good day. It doesn't matter. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to think about your meal. It's going to be delicious.
Right.
Gosh.
No,
but that's that great resilience that you develop and that creativity when you really don't have as much, man. But you know what? That is good living too. You know, that's pretty good living too, you know?
Economically, I try to figure that out. You know, if something were to hit, like a natural disaster or something like that, and this all started with, you know, what do you think is next? What do you think is going to kind of hit next, as pessimistic of a view as that is? But
I think it's realistic. I don't think it's pessimistic at all.
I think we should be going into 2021 like, you know,
right.
Should be taking more of a realistic perspective on things rather than, I mean, optimism is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean,
rainbows every day, I would be happy with it and do it too, but I can't. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, personally, bro, like, and this is not being Mr. Doomsday. Like, I don't see things getting a whole lot better anytime soon, but I'm not going to lose hope. Like, it's not going to strip my joy because like the things that come aren't that great, you know?
Yeah.
I think it all comes down to your perspective, man, and how you handle all those things too. You know, because at the end of the day, I still have my health, I still have my family, and that's what's the most important. And I think that if these times teach anyone anything, like, you know what, family should come first. Your loved ones should come first. And we've been so distracted by so many other things with all the entertainment and the politics and, you know, having this and that and the overabundance and, you know, overworking and, you know, enjoy the time that you have with your family and bond with them. You know, I think that's what's really important. I think that love, you know, loving on each other has been lost through everybody's, you know, busyness. And now we have an opportunity to kind of reset and reprioritize and really focus on what's important. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, is like cliche as it sounds, you know, when you talk to elderly people that were on their deathbed or about to pass, the, you know, the things that they're going to tell you is like, hey, you know, the thing I regret was not loving more or not spending enough time with my kids, or, you know, I spent too much time at work. And, you know, that's great advice, you know, and now you have that opportunity to do such things.
Well, and I think you're right about all of these challenges. If we can promote that and come back to that, give us that opportunity, because we live in a really busy, entitled consumerism, disconnected culture for the most part. Right. And when we have challenges like this, it does, if we can constantly bring ourselves back to that, it does give us the opportunity to kind of reform some of those. And that's part of the reason, like, I haven't been on social media lately too, like, other than school. And it's like, this has to be, but beyond my family, number one priority. It's like, man, I got to be in touch with the people around me. And if 45 minutes at the beginning and end of the day is time I could be spending with actual humans,
having
a conversation right now, at this time right now, I need to be doing that. And it's
so funny, like, how highly connected we are, but we're really disconnected. Mm. You know, like, we have access to everything, and yet we are so dysfunctional and disconnected from everything.
Yeah.
And the people that really matter aren't the ones that we're connecting with.
Well, and I think there's really simple ways to reform. We overcomplicate it and make it seem like we have to be volunteering somewhere every week, and we have to, and it's like, no, it really comes down to acknowledging someone when they're standing in line next to you or having a conversation, making eye contact. If you see someone struggling, one of my good friends was at Church for Ashes on Wednesday, and she said that church is packed. Everybody's got masks and trying to do their thing, but she was stuck in back with a woman that kept having to brace against the wall.
Yeah.
And she said, I just offered her an arm to help her get up to get her ashes, and she started bawling.
Yes.
Because it was such a kind gesture. And she was like, I teach my kids this. This is basic. Like, this is super freaking basic.
But we've lost it.
Mm-hmm.
But we've lost it. Like, people don't know how to be kind to each other. And there's so much hate and so much division. And it's like, man, we're all in this together. Yeah. And we should be lifting each other up instead of going at each other's throats for our differences.
And as, like, terrible as it
is, it doesn't make sense.
It sounds horrible to say it too, but, you know, I think that all this natural disaster stuff is kind of warranted. realistically with the actions that, I mean, kind of our country has continued to be in. But it also warrants a certain amount of respect for the other individual again, right? When all these catastrophes happen, you know, when 9/11 happened, when things started up in Iraq, you know, these different instances, you see a unity at some point in time, and not just of, you know, Americans together, but all over the country, there's some
Everybody
sort of
unity
that is brought together, you know, and that's something that, as terrible as it sounds, I feel like we need to,
you know, I don't think, dude, I don't think it's terrible. I think that for me, when, you know, I talk about God, you know, I say this, he's allowing all this stuff to happen because people just need to get it together. Right. I'm going to let this stuff go down. This, all this, it's going down, and you need to get your focus right. You need to get your eyes up high again. Right. Because you guys are all paying attention to the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's happening.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's going to continue to, I just hope that we don't continue to divulge into, like, you know, interpersonal devices, all this random stuff that you see on social media when it comes to hyper visualizing yourself and, you know, overblowing what you are and who you are, and people not being true to the people that are around them anymore. I just don't understand it, because I was raised by my grandparents, right? So my grandparents, that's just a status quo. You're respectful to your elders. You hold the door for people. You pull out chairs for individuals who are older than you. A very strong Italian household too. So, you know, it's something that we held, you know, very strongly. And I don't know, it feels like people are starting to break down from that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we've been losing that family dynamic for quite some time now. And, you know, my wife comes from that strong Italian family, and I never came from that strong family. And that was part of the appeal and the attraction, was like, man, this is what family's like. But I think that within our community, we can still create that for other people as well.
Yeah, I agree. I have,
because you come from something very similar, don't you?
No, well, my family is close. We don't have there's no cultural roots to that. And our family did, we kind of, as we aged, and my grandparents were very tight knit. Like, my grandma grew up in the South. She had 11 or 13, I can't remember, a lot of brothers and sisters. It was a blended family, and they were very, very poor, very, very poor. So they grew up depending on each other, right, and helping each other. And that did, it infiltrated. We grew up with that for a while, but I've noticed as that part of our family, my grandparents and their aunts, great aunts and uncles have passed away, that's kind of died off. And geographically, we're all in different places too.
Well, my wife and I were just talking about that too, is that when all of her aunts, great aunts started passing, like, the whole family just kind of, it just wasn't the same, because, you know, the older generation was the one that's really holding it together. But, you know, it's our generation and the one below, like, I think a lot of us are just so focused on being individuals and finding our identity and success in this world and becoming something, right? We're really individualizing a lot of things and making it about us. And I think we all get a little carried away. I even know now, knowing all these things, and even as much as I love my family and all the things that I do, it's really easy to start going down the wrong path.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's easy to start becoming very narcissistic and very egotistical and really making about what you do about you and not other people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that our culture has made that really easy for us, and the pressures of the things that go on has made that, like, good, everyone else is doing it right. And this is kind of, and it's so fast paced.
It's fast paced. It's normal too. And like you were saying, humans are built to take the path of least resistance. And that's how we are. That's what our culture supports that, because you can make money. You can make money off of making life even easier for people. One of the examples of that I wanted to bring up, because I thought it was so interesting when I was reading about it a couple years ago, but have you guys heard of the Blue Zones?
The blue zones?
The healthiest areas in the world, they call the blue zones.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
Okinawa and Sardinia, somewhere in Italy or whatever.
Yeah.
So that guy that wrote that book, he started a company that will help cities and communities start to incorporate some of those practices in the city, within the city layout.
Yeah.
And when I was listening to his interview and reading some of his stuff, he said it has to be, if you really want this in your community, like you've got an obesity epidemic and diabetes, heart disease epidemic, and you really want to take care of that and you want to work with them, it takes work, because what we do is we come in and we make everything less convenient. So you have to, he said, for humans to be able to take this path where they're walking, they're moving more and they're eating better and whatever, there has to be not an easier alternative. So when it comes to like bike paths or parking areas opposed to businesses, he was like, we change all that up. And that is the only way it's effective when there's not an opportunity to do it in an easier manner. So he was like, some cities sign on, but it's a commitment to do that.
Do you think especially here? I mean, okay, so setting like Colorado Springs, absolutely. I think that can happen in Colorado Springs very, very easy. Transitioning the whole infrastructure to a more green friendly and more active type of society, because we're already kind of in that sphere anyway.
Yeah.
But within, you know, like cities, you know, Denver, Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, do you think that's, they can transition to something like that?
Those are huge cities. I think if it were a long-term plan, for sure you could, but we just don't, that's part of with the entitlement we have and everything. I don't think we realize like how bad our health really is. We kind of talked about it when we talked about the pandemic and how many people die. Nobody's fired up because we have hundreds of thousands of people dying from heart disease and diabetes and lifestyle diseases. And I get that that's a slower process. You don't just
The first two killers are basically lifestyle related, right? Cancer and heart disease, right? That's lifestyle related.
Yeah.
Number one and number two killers.
Wow.
And you are right. People don't even realize how unhealthy they are. The United States of America, I'm pretty sure at this point, it's like 68% of Americans aren't just overweight at this point. They're considered obese.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, that's normal. It's normal. So we adjust for it. And just, I know this is a little bit off topic, but maybe a little bit not off topic. I'm finishing.
You know, we kind of get to talk about whatever we want. Right?
Yeah, this is our podcast. This is the
cold. I forgot. But on that path of what's normal and not normal, I've been finishing up some work on addiction, not finishing up, but continuing some work on addiction. And this doctor is talking about how destructive it is, but how much we see addicts and we punish them and we say that they deserve to, we're not going to help them because this is a choice and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, people also choose to put a terrible food in their body that gives them heart disease and gives them diabetes. And we don't look at that the same. We don't say, well, that's your choice. So we're not
what you're doing
your medication.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. That's going to get me going. Here's the thing. I think the nature of human beings is to take the focus of all the crap that they're doing and put the focus on somebody else, right? This way, I don't have to look at myself and the things that I'm doing, and I can project all that on somebody else and look at how bad they are, right? Don't look at me, look at them. And I think that's kind of human nature.
Yeah, it's about, humans are very much, they find value in somehow being better than.
Right.
I'm somehow better than blah, blah, blah.
That comes down to the
as we start to really, you put logic behind that. If you start putting logic behind that, you could do that same thing. Like we say an addict is self-punishing, blah, blah, blah. But so is all the people that are eating, myself included, like, unless you're wearing a sign that says I exercise 6 times a week and I don't smoke and I blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. If something happens to you, you shouldn't be helped. We don't do that. Right. Right. So why don't we extend that same compassion and courtesy to everybody who struggles with something?
Well, it's going to get hard, in my opinion, because, you know, you
going to get what?
It's going to get harder. It's going to keep getting
harder
to show that compassion. Like, it's going to keep getting harder to live a healthy life. It's going to keep getting harder to interact with each other as real human beings. We're at right now, because I was looking at this, we are at 6.7 billion people in the world. And it's going up. It's not gonna, it's not stopping. You know, we're reproducing like bunnies at this point in time. And there's not really a good plan in regards to, nor a set standard of how to interact with each other as normal human beings. Like, there kind of used to be a set standard and norm in America in like the 1960s and 1950s. And it was like that highlight type life. We're not going to talk about the whole huge amount of racism thing right now, because I'm black. I get it. I understand. But like, the deal, you know, part of life where everybody was like very nice to each other and interactive and everything like that. But now when you have so many people, first, how do you feed this amount of people without outsourcing? You know, how do you have a healthy population without outsourcing to more products that are going to naturally be unhealthy for you? How are you connective with individuals when there's so many people who are all the same, basically? We're told one thing, right? We're told to essentially not necessarily be individualistic, but to find ourselves, to do our own thing. So we're naturally inclined to be individualistic people based off of that. You know, how do you balance this growing population and this more centralized towards ourselves type of persona and ideal that we're being taught? And I mean, when it comes to the health portion of things as well, just trying to eat and make sure that we're eating nutritious foods. How do you do that? It's such a hard balancing act for me with all these topics that we've spoken about.
It's hard because it's comfortable, but I guarantee you, because companies need to make money, if consumers started saying, you know what, we don't want Pop-Tarts, and we don't want soda everywhere, and we don't want blah, blah, blah. If people started demanding healthier things, they would find ways to make it affordable so more people would buy it. Like, I fully believe that if people started demanding it, companies that want to make money off of it, you see that with any trend, companies that wanted to make money off of it would find a way to make it happen.
I think we can do that with energy. I definitely think we can do that with energy. I think we can do that with green energy all day. And I really think that that's going to be the step for us in this country and in other countries. It's going to be a strong focus on transitioning everything to, you know, more power plants, realistically, that are organized towards nuclear energy, you know, more electricity, more natural gases. But when it comes to the food portion of things, I don't know how you do that.
I think the challenging thing is this, is that, you know, you know, really bad food is really cheap to make, and people need to eat. You know, it probably costs a little bit more to eat a lot healthier, even though when you eat more nutritionally sound, you don't need as much food. And that's just the reality. But I think that we've put so much junk in our bodies that, you know, buying a box of Pop-Tarts for $2 and someone can sit down and eat a whole box of Pop-Tarts, like, you know, they're almost looking at a quantity over quality situation.
Yeah.
And then you have to understand that the compounds and the chemicals, the ingredients in those foods actually trigger more hunger and get you to eat more. And so, you know, I think it would always start with education, but the reality is people don't have a lot of money. They're going to buy what they can buy, you know, and that's that. I mean, if we were getting boatloads of beans and rice for dirt cheap, and people were willing to take the time to cook those beans and rice. Dude, here's the reality. Like, if I go and buy a bag of beans and rice, I don't spend a whole bunch of money, but you know where I spend my time cooking all that food, right? And so people would rather just convenience, right? You know, yeah. I can just buy the beans and rice in a can and a little bag here, and, you know, and there goes a lot of your money as well. And I think a lot of it would have to come to education, but at the end of the day, I believe that there's a greed in man that really wants people eating that garbage food. You know, those companies pump that stuff out. And I think we have a system, a healthcare system or a pharmaceutical system that almost depends on the crap that's being pumped into our bodies, because then we remain sick. And then those pharmaceutical companies are now maximizing their profits based on pumping people through with all these medications, right? And those medications have side effects, but that's cool because now there's medications for those medications, right? So I think it's like a pretty sick situation altogether. And there's a few hands in that pot at the same time. Because I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I think this is realistic. There are greedy people that could care less about your real health, yeah. Right? So, I mean, that's just money drives a lot of people, yeah. Right? And if something can make someone a lot of money, they would much rather live lavish and have that money. That money comes with a certain level of prestige and power. And, you know, I think that the greed of man will overconsume them and lead us into what's going on now, you know? So I think it's just a tough place to be.
It's interesting too how it's kind of structured. Here, this is what I mean when I say that. So Rob, when you weren't living the best life, when you were a little bit on the poorer side, mm-hmm. When you went to, what grocery stores did you go to?
Safeway. So we had Safeway, Alpha Beta were probably the two stores I grew up with.
Yeah. What are the two stores you grew up with? Those two?
Me?
Those were the two?
Probably Safeway and Alpha Beta were like my two stores.
So what type of products did you see in those places? Because personally for me, when I was growing up, especially when I was in Virginia and in North Carolina, in the areas that I grew up in, because they were on that lower end, a little bit more marginalized, more just poor, just in general.
Right.
We only had small little markets and shops that we would go to. Not a lot of those places had a lot of fresh produce.
Right.
As I started to grow and, you know, started to make more money, mom got out of tough situations. Grandma was taking care of us a little bit more. That's when I started getting introduced to more of those healthy foods. Right. That's when I started not having to do the state lunches, and I would actually be able to bring my own instead of living off of the slop that they basically give most of our public schools. Most of our public schools are just given
shit. You eat better in the hospital and jail than you do.
Yeah. But and that's what I'm kind of organizing it towards is, you know, the education piece is so strong to it because at a certain point in time, and it is connected to wealth at a certain level. There's no education about what your health can do, the foods that you're eating, and they get you hooked on it early. You know,
right?
I was eating fruit.
Well, I mean, they marketed all that. They market a lot of that stuff really well to little kids. I mean, if you walk into stores, like they have things that are strategically put in front of kids' eye levels, right? And you know, they have these colorful boxes and all these gifts. Like, you know, really, it's kind of sickening how they market all this stuff to the kids. And, you know, us as parents or adults, you know, we're the ones that have to be responsible for teaching our kids that, you know, that's what we teach Caleb at 4 years old. And he goes to a preschool and we don't let him, well, he can partake into some of the stuff, but, you know, we send our own nutritious food with him, you know, like, hey, we're teaching him, this is the foundations of your health. Like I teach my son that now, but even when I was growing up, and I'm sure Tessa could, you know, go along with this as well, is like, you know, I don't think food was as bad when we were kids. You know, we still ate a lot of the basic stuff, but like, you know, I think we've gotten so carried away with so much garbage now. And everything is being sold as healthy when it's not healthy. You know, when I was a kid, you didn't have to call something organic because it pretty much was, right? And now you're in this position where, like, it can be called organic, but is it really organic and non-GMO? Because, you know, somewhere here in this system, like, yes, it's a natural food, but, you know, what did it grow in or what did they do to it? Like, you know, it's how they market everything to us as well. So I don't know. I mean, I think things were a little bit different, and it's my responsibility to educate my children. And sometimes people just aren't educated in those areas, you know? And so education is huge, but I mean, are they really trying to, is Big Brother or is the system really trying to educate you? I mean, I don't trust our system. I don't trust that other people are going to do what's best for me and my family. And I have to go out and I have to do my own research and I have to do my own studies. And, you know, I got to learn this stuff for myself so that I don't fall into all these traps, so that my kids don't have to fall into these traps. And so I think there takes a certain level of personal responsibility in all of us to really do what it needs to take to make sure that our children have the best possibility of good health.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, go ahead.
That would be my soapbox if I could get up on it too, because the school lunches, what we are teaching, and the other thing that I was thinking of this when you were talking about food as we grew up and in the grocery stores and stuff. I don't know if you had this, Miles, but Rob, do you remember the prizes in the cereal boxes?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
The toys and stuff in there. Yeah, that was the whole reason that we picked the cereals that we picked was
Captain Crunch things. With Crunch Berries? You got to be kidding me.
It depends on the toy. Even then, that box of cereal that we got, whatever crappy cereal it was, it had to last us like at least a week between my brother and I. Mm-hmm. And so
we weren't overeating, right? Now,
yeah. You see, like, now they market like cereal bowls and stuff that are like, you know, you could put a half a box of cereal in it. So we've just gotten the food as a big, exciting form of entertainment. And it's like if we go on vacation, like, we'll look at the cities we're going to and be like, oh, there's a place that has a certain kind of pie or what, you know, we do indulge when we're on vacation or whatever, but we've made that like part of daily. Like, you could get a unicorn frappuccino every day.
I still have no idea.
Before school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've made that part of culture too. There's like a whole plethora of terrible, terrible eating habits in our country, especially in our country.
It's interesting, right? It's an interesting system, and people don't look at it from the outside perspective. Like, all right, what do you do to a society to keep that in line? What do you do? How do you do that?
Give them free stuff, bro.
Give them free stuff. Okay, so
give them free stuff.
We're going to give them healthcare. We're going to give them these, you know, assistance programs. We're going to give them all this, right? So, all right, we gave them that. But, you know, my buddy is working over at on Wall Street right now. It doesn't seem like the market's really effective the way that we want it to be, right? You know, so what do we do now? Okay, well, let's start to introduce more things that are addictive to them. What's the number one addictive product in the world? Sugar. Mm. So we're going to give that to them. We're going to market it as this greatest thing in the world. We're going to put it in everything.
Energy booster.
It's going to be fine, while we are also saying no to bad drugs and stuff like that. We're just going to keep filling up people like that. That's going to create chronic issues. And now, well, my friend over at Pharma over here at Big Pharma, you know, he has this new product that he can put out into the market, and we can set the price wherever we want to, right? So we might as well start pushing that into the market. We know that this sort of chronic disease is directly associated with, you know, fat consumption and over sugar consumption, which we naturally really aren't to even able to consume in that level that we are currently. And why don't we just keep them in this bubble, in this circular bubble of, we're going to give them assistance, we're going to also give them the chronic disease, and then we're going to give them the solution to that chronic disease. And
create the problem and the solution.
Yeah.
And we're going to normalize all of it, so it doesn't seem like there's anything wrong at all.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing, like, you know, we want to be able to trust those people, right? And they've taken advantage of that trust. You know, like we know we got what's best for you. Like when you start, you know, advertising stuff as natural and healthy and all that stuff, like it's a marketing scheme, you know, and a lot of people fall victim to that. And what they're doing is they're trusting in those companies to do the right thing. And then they're trusting in their doctors to prescribe them the right thing. And you know, these medical systems to do the right thing for them. And it's really opposite of all that. You know what I'm saying? Here's the thing, what they're not promoting is nutrition, hydration, stress management, fitness or movement activity, sleep, right? That's the stuff that, like, that's actually really the cure-all. Like, you can take care of 90% of everything that is out there just by taking care of yourself, you know, and going back to simple living of just eating well, not overeating, right? Eating nutritional foods and getting enough rest. Like the things that we do to our bodies, you know, is really absurd. And there's no longevity in it. You know, you're only asking for sickness. Like sickness thrives in stressed out or acidic states. I mean, that's where everything starts to grow. That's where cancer starts to grow. And when you're pumping yourself full of meat with no vegetables and a bunch of sugar, and you're drinking soda and coffee all the time, and this acid, you're creating this acidic environment for death to grow. And that's exactly what's happening. And then you're going to take some pills to kind of dumb that down a little bit, only to create a new problem that something else has to come in and try to put a band-aid on that, right? If you took care of your environment, right, you would help yourself a lot. But I think a lot of times people just don't invest enough in themselves.
Wait, Rob, so you're telling me that I can't chug 2 bottles of vodka, have 6 burgers and drink 6 cups of coffee and then have a multivitamin and be fine?
Well, here's the deal, bro. That's your Friday night. That's what you're doing after this. But I mean, if that's
I am way too busy to do anything like
that. Right? No, I'm kidding. No, but that's the reality. Right. Yeah. That's truly the reality, is people are doing that to themselves. I mean, I was that guy that would drink all this vodka because it's a cleaner liquor, so it can't be that bad for you. And then, you know, meat's protein for my muscles, so I'm just going to eat a lot of meat. Right. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm going to drink diet soda because, man, I got my calories through all the alcohol and through that meat. Yeah. Like, you know, and you know, but that is. But that is a mindset that was created, right? Well, dude, this is what you need, right? And you can live off of this stuff. You can get by on this. You can still look the way that you want and do this, and this. Like that's so far from reality. You know, that's just asking for sickness. You know, and I know because I lived that life.
Yeah. And anybody that's lived in America has lived that life got caught up in that to some extent or a large extent. You can't really escape it unless you grow up and your parents are already organic farmers or something.
But we can get to a place.
Americans are in that.
Well, we can get to a place where we're all much, much more mindful. I think, you know, even for me, you know, I'll get carried away with the sweets once in a while, but at the end of the day, like, I know the long-term effects if I continue to eat those types of foods. Why do I really want to do that to myself? I mean, you know, I was a hardcore alcoholic, and I look back now and I'm like, man, I would wake up feeling like crap. And then I'd spend half a day trying to shake it off. And, you know, and then I would start the process all over again. And, you know, but we can do the same thing with food. Like you can get your body all groggy and then you're drinking all this caffeine to get up and go. And then you're like shoving your face full of more crappy food and your insulin spiking up and down and going this way and that way. And you're going through this perpetual cycle of basically sickness, and your body really wasn't intended to go through all that kind of stuff. I mean, the way that we tax our bodies, and this is why we're all so sick. That's why America's so sick, is because we just continue to destroy and pound and beat our bodies, and we're not mindful of it all the time. Just because you work out doesn't mean you can eat whatever you want, because inflammation still exists. And just because you look good on the outside doesn't mean you're not inflamed on the inside. Doesn't mean sickness isn't starting to like develop on the inside just because. And again, I know, because I was that guy. I was the guy that was a full-blown alcoholic. I was 220 pounds of solid muscle. On the outside, I looked great. I was crapping blood from all the alcohol that I was drinking and the drugs that I was using. But that's not what people could see. I was just showing what people could see. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So you can give the illusion only so long before your body just says, yo, I'm done.
Yeah. And that's both physical and mental, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But at that point, guys, we are finished up for today. Next week, we're going to be back around Thursday, most likely Thursday this time. We promise we'll be back at that time. And we'll go into how, you know, putting the word diet in front of something was the best marketing ploy that anybody ever made.
How about fat-free? How about fat-free?
Yeah,
that's fat-free. Oh, that's a good one, too. All natural.
Low calorie.
All right. Bye, guys. We'll see you next week, y'all.
All right, guys.
Have a good weekend.